Hi, this is Chris, and I am reading a 2004 edition of The Red Eye in Roscoe Village, and you, my friend, are listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine, but you knew that.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate you. Good morning and welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today for show number 881. And what we do here on this show is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty in the WGN radio studio as usual. So good morning to Bob. And again, I say thank you so much for listening to the show today. So you heard Chris right there reading The Red Eye from back in the day. So if you have no idea what The Red Eye was, allow me to explain. The now defunct Red Eye, which began publication in 2002, was a tabloid edition of the Chicago Tribune. And according to its Wikipedia page, so you know it must be true, was geared to 18 to 34-year-olds. The idea behind the Red Eye was to hook younger readers as they commuted to work so they would one day migrate over to the big kid version of the Chicago Tribune. It went heavy on pop culture and also featured easier-to-digest versions of stories that appeared in the Trib. I didn't mind the Red Eye that much. I mean, it was easily accessible at L stations and was a nice way to pass the time on the train. Granted, the reporting wasn't the caliber or the depth of the larger version of the Tribune or the venerable Chicago Reader, but sometimes when you were just traveling a few stops up the line, it was a nice way to catch up on the news. The Red Eye stopped publication in 2017, which means the publication was around a lot longer than I originally thought. And from what I can tell, its social media and online presence hasn't really been updated since 2020. Of course, how could this publication, which was a physical, tangible paper, compete with the supercomputers in our pockets, our cell phones? Now look, I'm as guilty as the next person of reading news updates on my phone on the train. It really is something, though, when you walk into a train car and you see the collective neck lurch over cell phone screens. I mean, there was a time when you couldn't read anything except a text message on your phone. There was a time when your phone flipped open. There was a time when your cell phone wouldn't even get reception on the L when you went underground. But times have changed a bit, maybe even progressed a little. And now we can get information no matter where we are, although I still miss my emerald green screen on my original Sprint flip phone. That thing was durable. I'm not complaining, but I miss the days of picking up the newspaper, physically picking it up, or a magazine, or a book, or that brick of a newspaper, what the Chicago Reader used to be, and reading it on public transportation. I know, if I really wanted to read an actual book or paper, I could do that, but again, I fall into the trap of the cell phone vortex because it's, well, really easy to do. And I guess it's not all bad. Getting up-to-date information is sometimes a good thing. But so is unplugging. Maybe so is picking up a physical newspaper on the train or on the bus. Getting out of our routine can sometimes be a good thing. So let's think about that as we dive into today's show. You're going to learn about a local piano player with massive talent who's been playing in and around Chicago for decades in the Secret History of Chicago Music segment. You'll get the lowdown on a local festival next weekend that celebrates inspiration. And Illinois will soon debut its first green dining hub that was created in part by an organization that was born out of the pandemic. What is a green dining hub, you ask? Well, stick around to find out. So just like breaking our routine of staring at a screen while we travel, let's embark together on a journey of learning about some local topics that you might call, wait for it, outside the loop. You know, I think our marketing department really has a slam dunk with that name. Back in the dark days of the pre-vaccine COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, we saw our favorite restaurants close down to indoor dining. But Oak Park Village trustee Ravi Parakat figured out that if 10,000 village residents spent $25 a week on local takeout, that would generate enough money to save local restaurants. And that plan largely worked, it turns out. Today, the nonprofit organization Takeout 25 has grown, and now this organization is addressing issues such as food insecurity and sustainability. Recently, Takeout 25 partnered with the Illinois Green Business Association to create the first ever green dining hub. This will be in the Oak Park area. It's the first in the state. And this will launch next weekend, September 9th, at Berry Fest in Oak Park. Ravi Parakat is here with us today to talk all about it. He is, again, a village trustee in Oak Park and the founder of Takeout 25, online at takeout25.org. Ravi, great to have you on the show again.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Always a pleasure.
So this is really exciting. I feel like every time we're talking these days, it's about a new initiative, and that's good because there was a while there when we were talking and it was just, you know, restaurants are still closed. You got to go get that takeout. You got to save these restaurants. But like I said, that plan really worked to a large extent. So, okay, this green dining hub, this is really cool, I think. Tell us about what the plan is here.
Yeah, so as you pointed out, Mike, coming out of the pandemic, we expanded our mission as an organization. We set it up as a not-for-profit and expanded the mission to include food security and sustainability. Now, within the sustainability element of our mission, you know, we are looking at promoting our local community as Illinois' first green dining hub. So it kind of encapsulates our sustainability aspirations as an organization.
So I know the restaurants here that are going to be part of this initial green dining hub, they had some input. The owners of these restaurants had some input. So practically speaking, what does this mean? What does this look like, this green dining hub?
Yeah, so when we initially spoke to the restaurants, restaurants always have this fear of sustainability because it can get expensive in terms of sustainability strategies. So when we talk about greening business, it could mean money or money that restaurant owners have to put down. So that fear is what we wanted to kind of break down. So through this green dining hub, we are using the power of collective action to make it a little less scary for restaurants to come down this path. So what that would mean is, we are partnering with the Illinois Green Business Program, so CDAC, the Smart Energy Design Center out in Urbana-Champaign. So they are helping us do assessments with these restaurants. And those assessments, we will get information about each restaurant that's participating. And from that, we can tease out some of the strategies these individual restaurants can take and some of the strategies that they can collectively take so that we can reduce the overall cost of this journey. Right? So that's what we are embarking on.
Which is exciting because, to your point, I think we hear sustainability or environmental issues and there's the assumption that, oh boy, if I'm going to sort of retrofit my house or my business to be environmentally sustainable, then maybe I'm looking at a lot of money here, but you're trying to break that down. And really, these restaurants, I mean, kudos to these restaurants. I believe there are eight or so that are going to be a part of this who are saying, yeah, come on in, do an assessment, see maybe where we can tighten things up. If it's like the garbage flow or if it's the HVAC or something like that. I mean, these restaurants are open to that, those suggestions, and then the work begins.
That is right. Actually, it is 25 restaurants. We are aiming for the 25 network now has close to 100 restaurants. So our goal was to get 25 of these restaurants assessed and ready for the launch, and we've met that goal. So that is the goal that we had when we were thinking about this about a year back.
In terms of what the idea here is, so we've got this green dining hub, and we'll talk about the launch that is officially happening next weekend, Saturday, September 9th. I know some other cities have done this across the United States. So what's the goal here? What's the end game in terms of what this is going to look like if we look to other cities as examples?
Yeah, so there are a couple of other examples. I think, it's been experimented in Nevada, and I think it's been experimented in St. Louis, closer home. But what we are really trying to do here is, can we create a commercially responsible model for sustainability in the food ecosystem? So here, the concept that we are promoting is a little different because it's more of a hub concept as opposed to a district. So it is a little broader in its context from a geographic standpoint. Mm-hmm. And the intention is twofold. So one is, go down this path of greening in a very commercially responsible way. But at the same time, can we attract people with sustainability values to come patronize our local businesses that are participating in the Green Dining Hub? So creating revenue options for the restaurants for their participation so that it becomes snowball effect, right? So the restaurants get some benefit from it, and they're able to in turn put that benefit back into their business for a greener future. And then that in turn inspires others to come be a part of this ecosystem. Now, what we also want to do is, within the community, we want people to, really feel proud of the fact that we are Illinois first and we're going down this path. But what we also want is, we don't want this to be just the only, right? We just want it to be the first green dining hub in Illinois. We'd like other communities to aspire to be a green dining hub in the future, or kind of learn from what we're doing. So we'd like other communities to be inspired by what we are doing. So the goal would be, manyfold. So it is giving direct commercial benefit to restaurants, making our food ecosystem more green, making our community proud about the fact that we are leading on this, and then inspiring other communities to come join us or go down this journey based on our example.
So hopefully, we're going to see other green dining hubs pop up throughout the state of Illinois. This is going to be the first, but this certainly, as you're saying here, Ravi, hopefully is not the last, and there are some incentives for these restaurants to be a part of that. So you're going to launch next Saturday, September 9th. This is at Berry Fest in Oak Park. Tell us about what's coming up next weekend.
So next weekend, we launched Takeout 25 as a nonprofit at Berry Fest a couple of years back. So we're using this event as a launch off point for this long-term journey around the Green Dining Hub. So we have 25 restaurants who've gone through this assessment. We've given them individualized strategies, and we've got some collective strategies to execute. Now we are ready to get this out in front of the community to say, these are the restaurants, these are some of the strategies, these are some of the success stories that we've already had. Let's support them. Let's support this overall effort as a collective and see how far we can take this. And for this, we have also recruited 40 odd community ambassadors. So these are people, we train them on what this Green Dining Hub is, so that they can then have conversations within our community and also on social media about the Green Dining Hub, so that more in the community are aware of what exactly is happening. And to coordinate all of that, we have an intern who is doing her master's at DePaul, master's in sustainability management. she's coming and helping us with that. So this launch next week is a culmination of a lot of these efforts and a real way to engage the community as we get this whole journey off the ground.
That's exciting. And so what time will you be out at Barrie Park next Saturday?
So between 12 and 5, and we will have a couple of stations where these community ambassadors will actually be, fielding questions from the community. And for anybody who is participating in Barrie Fest, if they go, hear 30 seconds about the Green Dining Hub and raise their awareness, they also get a box of Takeout 25 water, which is, again, part of our sustainability goals.
This is really exciting what you're up to here. Takeout 25 is growing and now the first ever green dining hub in the state of Illinois. And it's happening in the Oak Park area. Very exciting. Check out takeout25.org. Takeout25.org to see all the great work of Takeout 25. And Ravi Parakat is the founder of Takeout 25. He's also a village trustee for the village of Oak Park. Ravi, congrats. This is exciting. And I'm really thrilled to see where this goes next.
Thank you so much, Mike. And I'm really excited about this initiative, and if it has the ability to cascade through the state and have a lot of impact, so really, really exciting.
Inspiration is an important motivator in our lives, and we can celebrate inspiration next Sunday, September 10th at Douglas Park. That's at 1401 South Sacramento Drive. That's when the Inspired by You Festival takes place. The event highlights community, connection, and collaboration. George Davis Jr. is the owner of Muse Coffee Studio, and that business is helping to present this festival. It's online, the website inspiredbyufest.com, and George Davis Jr. is here with us today. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. So this sounds exciting. I like the story here. So tell us about this festival. Again, it's called Inspired by You. What is it? How did this get started?
So it's the Inspired by You Fest, and it got started just through what we do here at the coffee shop, at Muse Coffee Studio. A lot of sort of what we present to our customers is just all of the things that have inspired us, just from the different parts of culture, the art, the music, the city in general. And so a lot of what we get back in terms of feedback and what people, share with us is how much some of the things they're able to engage with here inspire them to, go out and kind of reconnect with an artist that they hadn't heard in a while, or go and pay it forward to somebody just in terms of some act of kindness or generosity. And so the spirit of that is kind of what inspired us, out of fear of overusing the word inspiration and inspire, inspired us to kind of put this fest together.
I think it's now especially refreshing when we have a festival that's about inspiration and about, it could be artists, like you were saying, it could be just people, it could be the neighborhood, the city. When we get that wave of inspiration, or we get an idea because we heard someone's work, or we read someone's work, or we had a conversation, or we took a walk and maybe that was just really impactful, I kind of feel like all those things kind of go into what you're trying to do here to really celebrate the larger community.
Absolutely. A big part of our growth, even as a business, has really been from the community, spreading the word just about the experience that they had while they were here. We have a book club, and so a lot of people engage with that. And, it's been a lot of community involved in just how people find out about us and have an opportunity to engage with us.
And I think it's important to think about the context, right? Because we're talking about the area like around North Lawndale, right? Douglas Park is is right there in that neighborhood. And, you know, to be frank here, if you look at the headlines, that's not a neighborhood that gets great headlines a lot, right? And so to have this, and I always like to remind folks that, you know, there are so much more than those headlines. I mean, there are great people doing great things and a lot of inspiration to be had in your neighborhood. That celebrates what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you made that point, because this, again, it really is our opportunity to bring something to that area, to that community, which is, you know, an extension of our community, that a lot of the other areas of the city get to experience all the time. And it's, you know, really been a labor of love in that way.
Yeah. And you've got performers. I mean, you have vendors and performers that are coming up at this fest. Again, it's called Inspired by You Fest, happening Sunday, September 10th at Douglas Park. And tell us about the lineup here, because I know you got some folks coming in. You have vendors who will be selling things. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, so our headliner is Madison McFerrin, which is Bobby McFerrin's daughter. Super talented. We have a couple, all the other artists who are performing are actually artists that are from Chicago. Our host is a Whitney Young alum, as well as myself, Clark Jones. We have Brooklyn Sky. We have Jay Quest. We have Yomi, who's an incredible harpist. And then we have a lot of local vendors. And I say local just because of the proximity to the city. But they are vendors who have things that obviously, you know, are kind of known across the whole landscape. And so it's local in the sense that it is, again, inspired by the city, inspired by the community, and something that, you know, we hope to have the community come out to. But it's so much bigger than just kind of the city of Chicago and Douglas Park itself.
So if we want to go to the Inspired by You Fest, again, it's next Sunday, September 10th at Douglas Park, we should hit up the website. Is that the best way to go? Inspiredbyyoufest.com?
Yep. Just go to the website, click the tickets. We also have merchandise available for sale. We have our festival shirts and hoodies that were designed by Langston Austin, who's, again, an incredible visual artist who has a lot of ties to the city. And so all of that stuff is available right there on the website, inspiredbyyoufest.com.
And I think it's really cool that you are helping to present this with Muse Coffee Studio, because your shop is kind of like a community hub. And this is maybe a little bit larger of an extension of that. But really, it's about bringing people together, having conversations, and just getting inspired, which, again, we can celebrate. So that's really what this is all about.
100%. I don't know if I could have said it better myself.
Well, you know, that's why we'll, you know, keep paying me the big bucks or something. So, George, look, this is great what you're doing. We should all go to the website, inspiredbyyoufest.com, inspiredbyyoufest.com, celebrating inspiration and collaboration and community and connection in Chicago and beyond. George Davis Jr. is the owner of the Muse Coffee Studio and helping to present the Inspired by You Fest. Hey, George, good luck next Sunday, September 10th in Douglas Park. It's going to be a great time, and it's very exciting. Congrats.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Fest once again, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of one, Mr. Steve Krakow, the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader. And this week, Steve, we are once again getting jazzy. Maybe it's been a little while since we've gotten jazzy, but the piano player, a local guy who is so good, Marshall Vente. I mean, he is, I think for some, maybe we don't know that name, but if you like jazz, and if you especially like local jazz, then this guy might be someone that you've heard of.
Totally. And, you know, I didn't even time this in my head, but Chicago Jazz Fest is going on right now.
Look at that. Look at that.
Look at that. So, jazziness just must be in the air. And, yeah, you know, it's jazz is sort of a genre that gets a lot of love in Chicago. But, you know, thinking about it, these days there aren't that many sort of stars, you know, who sort of shine out, you know, in this, unless you are very much kind of in that particular scene. And Mr. Vente, you know, he just should be. And you hear him and you see his credentials and his like insane career that he's had, and you're like, why is this guy not known to the world? But then you're like, oh, maybe just jazz musicians aren't that known these days, you know?
That could be. That could certainly be. And, you know, his story, like you say, it is just remarkable. He was born in 1951, and he was raised in Roseland on the far south side of Chicago. Of course, musical family, his mother playing organ in church. And this is an example of him starting early. He starts piano lessons at age 7 and then gets some early sort of jazz influence in the late 50s, early 60s, doesn't he?
Yeah. I guess he was, you know, visiting New York, you know, like 10 years old, and was in this New Yorker hotel, which was really famed place for jazz, and heard it and was basically like, that is, you know, what I want to do. And he started studying, kind of shifted from classical to jazz piano, you know, learning.
Which is really cool. Of course, he's going to, his family's going to move a little bit in 1963. They're going to move to Western Springs, and then he becomes a teenager, and Marshall Vente is going to start his first band in 1966 with his friends from LT, Lyons Township High School, and Hinsdale in there. And what happens after this?
Well, he goes and studies at University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, and, you know, has a few more kind of like big epiphanies. Sees Cannonball Adderley play, who's a total legend, and did a little like 2-day workshop with him. And then he met this guy, Paul Smoker, who I had never heard of, but they kind of a big deal, trumpet player. And he was teaching at the university, and it sounds like he might have taken him under his wing a bit, you know, and like had him playing in his ensembles. And he's also playing in like the university big band ensembles and everything as well. So, you know, it sounds like he's basically getting like, you know, a musical education in about every way, you know, from playing to from everything.
Yeah, which is, you know, the way to do it. I mean, you can learn a lot in school, obviously. I'm a big fan of school. But getting out there when it comes to music and just playing with people and learning, especially with jazz, learning how to react and listen to other musicians. I mean, we've seen this with blues as well. It's just playing with folks is the best education you can get.
You said it, man. You said it. No, seriously, I agree. And that's, you know, that's sort of like the punk DIY ethic, too. It's just like, just start a band before you can, you know, 80% enthusiasm, 20% ability, the rest will catch up to you. You know, is basically, that's basically the ethic. And that was my ethic when I started. I could play like 2 chords on the guitar and I'm like, I'm starting a band, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what the heck I'm doing, but you know what? Like you said, listening is like the most key thing. And even some of the best musicians in the world don't do it. They overplay and they play over people and stuff. It's really what really distinguishes people is your ability to listen and react, especially in jazz.
100%. So, yeah.
Right on.
Right on indeed. So, okay, Marshall Vente is, as he's getting older here, he is playing with so many people and he's coming up. What are we looking at here for recordings? Because this is when we start to have that conversation.
Well, yeah, you know, so he starts delving. He starts to kind of get a long-running band lineup, even though he's sort of always shifting from like three pieces to a octet, you know, to a he's definitely delving into like Brazilian and bossa nova music too, always has been a sort of recurring theme in his career as well. But yeah, finally he sort of gets to record an album in like late 82, and that's how I became aware of him, you know. And again, I consider myself fairly versed in local jazz, and I was like, what's this LP? Which I just found at the thrift shop. And it, you know, it's sort of like a hand-drawn-y looking cover. It's on a very tiny label out of Barrington, Illinois. Not hotbed of musical activity exactly out there in Barrington. I know from experience, okay? And maybe it was different in 1982.
Right, but right.
I was like, this is some real fringe outside. I'm like, nope, this guy's got like a very impressive career and everything. But yeah, it just came out on a very small label, this album Endless Intensity, and it was recorded here in the city over on Belmont at Acme Studios.
So he's still recording. He's doing some teaching, right? He's involved in some music education.
Yeah, he was. Currently, he's teaching jazz history and jazz piano in Elmhurst. But he also, before that, he taught a few other places as well. And at Roosevelt University, he was before that. He's had his own jazz festival since 92, which ran to 06. So that could come back. You can still, for sure, he's got a radio show called Jazz Tropicale on WCB 90.9 FM, and that is still going today. It has been running since 1992.
That right there. Okay, so he's a brother in radio sound.
Yes.
WDCB, we don't usually, you know, promote other stations on the big mighty 720 WGN, but you know what, DCB is just a great station, and you talk about preserving jazz and that music and the history. DCB has been doing that for a long time, and so he is every Sunday night at 10, Marshall Vente, WDCB, 10 o'clock Sunday nights.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm at variety on the radio. That's what makes it great.
That's right. Know? That's right. So, I mean, he's getting also, we should say that, critically acclaimed. I mean, we're talking about him as someone who you're profiling in the Secret History of Chicago Music Strip, but he has gotten some accolades. Like, people know that on the piano, Marshall Vente is legitimate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a classically trained performer, composer. He really, you know, was extremely well versed in the history of it all. So yeah, he's done, you know, sort of a renaissance man in for jazz here in Chicago. And you know, I think another thing important to point out is a lot of those kind of guys leave Chicago. I hate to say it, but they go to New York. They go to LA. They may mostly go to New York, you know. And he's still here, and he's still doing his thing, you know. And I mean, we got a top shelf jazz guy who has been here in Chicago, you know, his whole life, and you should go see him if you can.
Yeah, that's right. He's still doing it. So Marshall Vente, and he's on the radio too. He's everywhere. I mean, I love that. He's still playing, and we should celebrate his work. So that's who we are talking about today, and that is who you can see profiled the entire story in the Chicago Reader, the hard copy, or go to chicagoreader.com for the Secret History of Chicago music strip in the Reader. Steve Krakow is the author of that strip. He's also known as Plastic Crime Wave, and he also draws a picture of whoever he's profiling, so you can see his hand drawing of Marshall Vente. Hey, Steve, I love it. This is great music. We're keeping jazzy into September, and it's the weekend of jazz in Chicago. Oh, my goodness.
Let's celebrate some summer jazz.
And that will just about do it. Outside the Loop show number 881 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. I appreciate it. I appreciate Bob Ferguson for all of his help in the WGN radio studio today on the engineering side. Have a wonderful Labor Day weekend, and I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.